It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We are a minute and a half past the hour, and we've reached midweek here at the mid-month week of April 2018. It is the 18th day of April 2018. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where we're living these days. That's where we're dropping our keys at night and got the shoes under the bed and everything. HeadOn.live is where you go if you'd like to be part of the new, easy-to-access chat room that it does not rely on Java and is not a total mess for people who have things like Macs, Apple products, and what have you. Yeah, just go over to HeadOn.live and scroll down till you find the the chat room link. Click on it and pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in. Anatole and Foam Cups will be waiting there for you, and others will wander by presently because we don't have a tardy bell here. Also, at HeadOn.live, you'll find access to the means by which we keep this program on the air, namely the PayPal button and the Patreon button. And with that in mind, an announcement. Just shortly before, about 8 minutes ago, shortly before airtime, I got a note from Tony in Chico, who is one of our longest-standing subscribers. And the subject line on the email was Tax Day Challenge. Well, hi there, says Tony. I caught the last half of the show yesterday, the food porn conversation with Todd while I was doing my last-minute taxes at the kitchen table. Well, we did go on past food porn, but yeah, that was some epic food porn, I must confess. Tony says, since I'm getting a refund, I want to put forth a challenge to my fellow Horn listeners. I want the subscriber base for the Horn to grow. Therefore, I will match new subscribers, PayPal or Patreon, either one's fine, initial donation up to a total of $100. In other words, if 10 people donate $10 each for a total of $100, the challenge is over. So, my fellow Horn listeners, I'm not George Soros, but take my money, please. And signed, Tony in Chico. So, how's that work? Well, if we can get 10 new subscribers, then each of you 10 will have your first month's subscription doubled. If we get 10 new $10 a month subscribers, each subscriber will get their first month subscription doubled, courtesy of Tony in Chico, who understands the critical importance of the subscriber base in helping to keep everything going here at the Horn. And that would be very, very helpful, because that would then mean we were done with fundraising for this evening, except for a remainder of $90 from last night. So can we do that? It would be awesome if we could. And like I said, it may not happen in the 3 hours of the program because the number of people who listen via podcast is considerably larger than the people who listen live, and I understand why. There's a lot of cool stuff on right now, so I get that. But you know, we'll watch over the course of the next 24 hours or so. 10 new subscribers will get their first $10 a month subscription doubled, courtesy of Tony and Chico. In the meantime, we have thanks to send out for our subscribers, partial sponsors of this evening's program, namely, we have four subscribers for the 18th day of the month, or I'm sorry, three. Yeah. Thank you very kindly to Jeff out in Oregon. Thank you, Jeff, for being a partial sponsor of the program. Thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rhode Island. Thank you, Charlene, for all you do to keep the program on the air. Thank you to Grace in New York. Thank you, Grace, for your partial sponsorship of the program. Thank you very, very much indeed. And so there it stands. We've got a $100 challenge on the table for new subscribers, and we need to raise $290 this evening. And you know, it's convenient because here in a little bit the deacons will do their thing, because it is, of course, prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. And oh, brethren and sisters, I got to tell you, the little old blue-haired ladies got a bit of a wild hair. They fired up the pressure fryer that they usually use for things like fried chicken. But they were, I guess it's something about the spring and spring tonics and oh, brethren and sistren, they got a hankering for innards. Oh, they did. It was Chicken Innards Wednesday in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, brethren and sistren. They got that pressure fryer going, and they got a bunch of organic, free-range, cruelty-free, gluten-free, soy-free, vegan, organic, non-GMO chicken livers and chicken gizzards and chicken hearts, and they set to battering them in vegan, cruelty-free, gluten-free flour. And oh, mercy sakes alive, they fried them in that pressure fryer. There's a little bit of salt and pepper and some various spices to bring it all to life there in the coating mix, and they served them up. Those little old blue-haired ladies, I mean, whew, mercy! They served them livers and gizzards and hearts up, alongside a whopping big pot of mashed potatoes and gravy, you know, cream gravy made with the bits left over that they dredged out of the fryer. Oh, it was so good. And the baked beans alongside, had a little bit of carrot and raisin salad, just to celebrate the warm and sunny day that we had here, and will probably be replaced by a goddamn blizzard in a day or so, the way things are running. But springtime lemon cheesecake with a classic graham cracker crust on the dessert table. They had to make a passel of those, and talk about making work out of the deacons. Oh my God, brethren and sistren, the deacons just made absolute pigs of themselves. I mean, they about foundered themselves before they even got done with the chicken livers and gizzards and hearts, the innards. But the cheesecake didn't stand a chance, and that meant the little youngins in the fellowship hall didn't stand a chance either. And then the deacons trundled their massive bulk up the couple of flights of stairs and went a waddling out into the parking lot to smoke with the sinners. I had to follow them because Sister Carol Baker is on vacation right now. So I grabbed up the solar-powered Cathedral of Common Sense cattle prod, and well, I don't have the force and effect that Sister Carol does. They looked at me a couple of times like, no, we ain't going to come in yet. We ain't done smoking. And then I hit the button, and it crackled a little bit, and they realized that, yeah, I've been taking lessons from Sister Carol, and I was not afraid to use that thing. So they did. They ambled slowly past me and gave me some dirty looks as they wandered through the vestibule and past the bowl of desiccating butter mints and wandered and ambled and meandered down front and kept giving me the stink eye, deacons did. And then I followed down behind them and climbed up into the pulpit and got behind the lectern here. So, brethren and sistren, what I'm going to do is, we're going to call the minister of music up right here this very minute. And ask him to lead us in the offertory hymn, brethren and sistren. And then the deacons will place it. Will take the heavy brass bound burgundy velvet lined offering plates with the PayPal button that works on Wi-Fi, the PayPal button in the bottom of it, and start passing it amongst the congregation. You see, even as the singing goes on, and hopefully by the time we're done there, we'll have some new subscribers to either the Patreon or the PayPal subscription campaign. Just check that little box that says make this happen once a month, and it will. Or over at Patreon, and it all just comes out on the first day of the month. So you, even if you become a member of the Patreon campaign, you don't even have to think about it for another 12 days. Praise Jeebus. Right. And remember, for those of you who subscribe, I mean, after that fabulous meal down in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, for which we charge nothing, it's an act of love from Matthew 25. But after a meal like that, to think that a $10 a month subscription is equal to spending less than half the cost of a disgusting McDonald's hamburger for every program, and nobody ever gets charged anyway. Well, brethren and sistren, I tell you what, that'd have me tapping Morse code on that PayPal button, brethren and sistren, it really would. So, brother minister of music, if you would step forward here and lead us in our offertory hymn.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen!
Amen.
Let me hear you say, praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity, yeah. Whoever said religion should be free?
Oh, hut, sut, Ralston on the riller, and a brawl, suet. I love you, brethren and sistren. Welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday here on the Horn. Glory, I'm calling upon you right now, because we do things in reverse We don't do the altar call at the end. We do the altar call at the beginning. I'm calling on you right now, brethren and sistren, to stand up. Get off of your seat. Get onto your feet and wiggle and waddle and move without rhythm so as not to attract the sandworm's glory. And come on out and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall, 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 heathens, upon your knees at the altar. Help, glory, amen. And lay your hands upon the subwoofer. Help, amen. And feel the healing rays of common sense aflow you, flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Munificent Mufti, Bob Kincaid, and this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday from the Cathedral of Common Sense, coming to you for your spiritual nourishment. Yes, brethren and sistren, I have to tell you that we got us some elitists out there in the Radio Land congregation. Brother Marty just said, chicken innards, excuse me while I spend this prayer meeting in the loo puking my lunch out. Wasn't that good a lunch either? Well, I bet you our chicken innards was better than your lunch, Marty. You're just a liberal coastal elite because you ain't never ate nothing so good in your life as organic, free-range, cruelty-free, vegan chicken livers and gizzards and chicken hearts, all done up all gluten-free and soy-free. Mercy sakes alive. Some kind of good. Brethren and sistren, I want to send out thanks to Foam Cups over in the chat room for getting us started on the fundraising this evening. That means we got $265 yet to raise in that $100 new subscriber challenge out there. It's not every day that we get a new subscriber challenge, so I'm hoping that I'm hoping folks will respond to it. You know, at the cost of half of one of those McDonald's hamburgers that is a sad and pathetic little gray disc of meat and some mustard and some ketchup and a piece of pickle and a little bit of onion on it. Hell, no, you don't even get the cheese, okay? That's how little this program seeks to stay on the air. Yeah, no. So, brethren and sistren, we have great articles of faith to investigate and elucidate this particular evening. We do. And it's not every day that we have a really whopping good Mormon story, but we got one this evening. Oh, yes, we do. And it's not just a Mormon. It's one of your top Mormons. It's the Mormon. He's kind of like a Mormon Pope or something. He's the president of the Church of Jesus. Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Russell Marion Nelson, brethren and sistren. He went plumb all the way over to Nairobi, Kenya. I think he was probably looking for the former president's birthplace, maybe. But the Deseret News said that there in Nairobi, over 2,000 people showed up to hear him talk about his faith that when he dies, he's going to get his own private planet with a whole bunch of sister wives. Apparently, there are, God only knows why, there are Mormons in East Africa, and a whole bunch of them traveled from a long, long way away to hear President Russell Marion Nelson, president of the Mormon Church, speak to him. And he went after some Mormon traditions that have developed outside of Utah. Apparently, in East Africa, generally speaking, there's a Mormon tradition that says families have to pay for a dowry in exchange for a bribe. This did not please President Nelson. He said, "That's not the Lord's way.
The Lord's way is to be married in the temple for time and all eternity, with your children sealed to you so that they will serve you on that planet that you go to with all your sister wives in the next life.
Okay, I added the last part about the planet, but it's part of the doctrine, so it's probably fair to mention. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Speaking to a whole bunch of people who probably don't have a whole bunch of money, President St. Russell Marion Nelson said, "We preach tithing to the poor people of the world because the poor people of the world have had cycles of poverty generation after generation. That same poverty continues from one generation to another until people pay their tithing. You daggummit, you're going to stay poor till you give me money." In other words, brethren and sistren, the prosperity gospel has found its way into the Mormon church. Mm-hmm. If you want to get out of poverty, you have to give money to the church. What a beautiful thing. How is it that the worst aspects of American culture seem to get traction a lot more easily than what Lincoln referred to as the better angels of our nature? Because that certainly does seem to be the case. What else? There's a big meeting taking place in the world of Roman Catholicism. They've gussied up the Pontifical Athenaeum Regina Apostolorum Catholic University in Rome for a gathering of 250 priests. What did Sting say in that one song? Squawking and flapping like a murder of crows. Yeah. 51 countries have sent a total of 250 priests and theologians and even some criminologists, according to Newsweek. To the Exorcism and Prayer of Liberation Conference. Yes. In the 21st century, the Roman Catholic Church is having a conference about demons. Yes, yes, yes. Father Pedro Barahon said the topics of discussion will include the prevalence of pornography in modern society. And the priests will then determine whether pornography is a, quote, modern cultural phenomenon of an evil that harms people, and the extent to which pornography is a function of the work of, well, it's an exorcism conference, demons. Yes. And then he said he also hoped that the meeting would, quote, open a space to see if there is a possibility to, aren't they going to need at least a third stage guild navigator to open that space? Maybe that's why Sparky's not in the chat room this evening. I don't know. Him being a spacing guild master and everything. Open a space to see if there is a possibility to show influence from the devil. The devil! In pornography, I don't know. And they're going to talk about some magic, and they're going to talk about some satanic worship, and they're going to talk about drug addiction and cultism and pedophilia, but they're mainly going to be focused on pornography. And pardon me for the cynical person that I very obviously am, but I've come by it honest. I really have. Forgive me if this all sounds like a cheap excuse for 250 priests to get to look at porn and not wind up costing the diocese a blue bajillion dollars along the way. because that's how long ago was it that we had the story of the priest that was busted with all the kiddie porn on his computer? Yeah, I know. That was up in what, Wisconsin? Wisconsin, where they where the church three-card Montied the money around and put all their money in a cemetery burial fund or some such several years back, so that people who had gotten judgments against the church because they'd been raped by priests couldn't get at the funds. Yeah, remember that? 'Cause I do. Yeah, I'm not sanguine about the possibility of any good coming out of this. I mean, it just surprises me that there's any question at all . I mean, I would have figured the church was pretty well set on the idea that pornography come from demons. At least when it's not coming through the camera of some priest. Mm-hmm. Apparently, Father Jose Enrique Oyarzun is going to be there. And he wants people to understand that the devil, and I don't mean Hillary Clinton, by the way, is real. He said, we should not think of the devil as a myth, a representation, a symbol, a figure of speech, or an idea. This mistake would lead us to let down our guard, to grow careless, and end up more vulnerable. Yes, I'm sorry. Everybody associated with the Vatican sounds like Father Guido Sarducci to me. My bad. But the thing is, this guy doesn't even probably understand where his idea, the church's idea of the devil comes from. I mean, it's not lost on a lot of scholars that the church's depiction of the devil is considerably similar to the church's depiction, or to the ancient Greeks' depiction of Dionysus, the god of wine. You know, what with his cloven hooves and his you know, ram's legs or what, the furry, you know, and the horns of a ram, and you know, right. And then, of course, all their depictions of the guy that my dear friend Eugene Finnerman refers to as CJ, Cousin Jesus, he looks like the depictions of Apollo. So, yeah. Now, here's the thing about exorcisms, though. People have been beaten to death as a result of exorcisms. And I don't mean like in the 15th century. I mean in the 20th. 1995, Pentecostal ministers, San Francisco, beat a woman to death trying to get the demons out of her. 1978, two priests in West Germany, what was then West Germany, and the parents of a woman, well, they were convicted of murdering the woman after they starved her via exorcism for 11 months because she had epilepsy. Annalisa Michel died, and when she died, her weight was 68 pounds. In 2000, several children died in the UK thanks to exorcisms. The government in the UK has noted that about 1,500 child abuse cases are linked to parents who thought their kids had a bad case of demons. And so there's the church. You know, guys, Put down, I mean, guys, not generically, guys, because, of course, can't have any of those filthy daughters of Eve out there participating in the priesthood. I mean, it's kind of like the Mormon story over there a minute ago. There's the president of the Mormon church talking to Mormons in Africa, and hell, it was only, well, it was less than a half century ago that the Mormon church got around to acknowledging that people with skin darker than a grocery bag were fully human. Yeah, I know. People. So, you know, we've got religion today, but the ongoing fascination of the religion industry, be it Protestant or Catholic, Orthodox, what have you, the fascination with demons as a cause of wickedness in the world continues to bedevil us. See, the nice thing about demons is that if demons are causing all the bad stuff, well, you know, it's like kudzu in the South. You're just going to have it. Or big-ass mosquitoes in summer in northern Minnesota. They're just going to be there. So if you're just stuck with them, you don't actually have to solve the problems that are occasioned by them. You can just wring your hands and, oh, you know what? We missed that demon. Missed him by that much. Oh, you know, dadgummit, we mispronounced our Latin. But the fascination with some sort of occult forces, when in fact the plain old garden variety here and now humanity has plenty of capacity to do evil without any supernatural influences whatsoever, is more than apparent. Well, it affects Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, all of them. Take, for instance, one of your more successful grifters out there in the current era, the guy who runs Liberty Council. Now that's the and it's old tax free lawyering group that provided free legal representation to, among others, Sister Clerk Kim Davis. And Matt Staver, he's the guy that runs the grift. He has to keep the people worked up that keep his grift running and keep him in the lifestyle to which he has become accustomed. Mm-hmm. And so by way of hustling the rubes, well, you get stuff like this.
Hi, I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Council. America is under siege, and I encourage you not to be intimidated, not to be apathetic, but to be encouraged and engaged. Every single day, the media airwaves are bombarding us with negative ideas. Negative ideas with regards to President Trump, the administration, America, and Judeo-Christian values. That is the tactic of the adversary. If you look at Isaiah chapter 36 and 37, that's exactly what the king of Assyria tried to do to the king of Jerusalem. He tried to win the psychological battle before he ultimately engaged in the physical battle. That is psychological warfare that has been practiced even from the Garden of Eden. Remember, Satan himself in the serpent, when he approached Eve, said, "Has God told you that you can't eat of any of the trees in the garden?" Well, that was a lie right there. That was fake news, because God didn't command them not to eat of any tree, just one specific tree.
He's working the pro circuit, Matt Staver is, because he's all the way back to the talking snake. And you know, here's the thing. If you believe that there was a time on Earth when gossipy Gabon vipers slithered about the planet, when chatty copperheads just hung out by the old garden path, then the odds of actually involving you in civic discourse and in self-governance, I would say, are statistically approaching zero. But Matt Staver understands that while they may be stupid, they've also got some money that he can shake out of them. I know, I caught that too, Arthur. Arthur says, wait, we're living in Assyria now, Brother Bob? Absolutely, and there's a king in Israel too. It, by the way, Geezer Disgustus sent out a tweet earlier today congratulating Israel on the 70th anniversary of their great independence. I admit it's like it's some sort of a tick with me. Awkward language is like fingernails across a chalkboard, and it feels like that shit got started with the Caribou Barbie, you know. Our great country, and everything had to have some sort of superlative adjective in front of it. Our wonderful flag. And, you know, all I can see, and by the way, he capitalized great and independence. Just like in another tweet earlier, he capitalized spy when he said, I am a spy. No, there's a tweet out there now in which Donald Trump admits being a spy. But I see things like that, and okay, well, you're celebrating. So when does Israel celebrate its lesser independence? Because that's the thing. If there's a great independence, there has to be a lesser independence. Or maybe that's the Palestinians. I don't know. And this isn't. And you know, he added. That's ATTED. That's a word now. He added Psycho Bibi in the tweet because he wanted to make sure Bibi knew that he was celebrating that Geezer Disgustus was right there celebrating their great independence too. Note coming in from Steve in New York. Hello, talking snakes. What's so unusual or weird about talking snakes? Hello, Bugs Bunny, Wile E. Coyote, Harry Potter could speak snake. So what's the big deal? Yeah, I know. It's that whole inability to distinguish reality from the fiction kind of. In a way, I guess you could say that the people Matt Staver's talking to are kind of like the termites or thermidors or thermians, in Galaxy Quest. Everything is just straightforward, factual to them. Those poor... You mean Gilligan's Island? Those poor people? Yeah, right. Well, let's continue to find out about this here Mirka that's under siege.
Is the tactic of the enemy. And so today what we're seeing is that same tactic played out in the area of politics and faith and values. Over the last year and a quarter, we've had so many advances with regards to religious freedom. We have the most pro-life, pro-religious freedom president in the history of America, the most pro-Israel president in the history of America, the most pro-American president in modern times.
Yeah, because you know, that Kenyan Muslim, you slurper, he wasn't pro-American. Modern times. Words mean things. What does modern times mean? Ask an academic, and they'll tell you that modern goes back to, the Victorian era. Modernity being a pretty well-defined sociological concept. So Matt Staver there is saying that, well, the dog whistle accomplishes its goal. Donald Trump is far more pro-America than Barack Obama ever was. And George W. Bush, he was pretty pro-America, but he wasn't near as pro-America as Donald Trump is. And that Bill Clinton, he wasn't pro-America at all. He was like Barack Obama. And Ronald Reagan, well, see, that ain't modern times. That was pert near 50 years ago. John Kennedy, he's either not modern or not pro-America. He did stand there and say, you know, Ich bin ein Berliner. What kind of an American says something like that? See, God.
And all of that, including the future of the United States Supreme Court, we stand to lose. We are one justice away from overturning the horrible decision of Roe versus Wade, the abortion decision.
Time out, Jack, okay? Time out. Now, remember, I mentioned that Liberty Council, this hustle that Matt Staver runs, is a tax-free, it's a religious tax dodge that supports keeping lawyers in the comfortable lives to which they've become accustomed in all 50 states, I do believe they've claimed. Well, what you just heard was a tacit endorsement, an explicit endorsement, of Donald Trump. He's not allowed to do that. This Christian just took a great big steaming dump all over the laws of the United States of America. That whole religious freedom thing is not resonating well. Marty says, the most pro-religious freedom, the most pro-Israel, George W. is going to be insulted, I think. Well, I mean, he did go to Israel and say that God talked to him personally. That's true. Bill in Allentown, subject line, ASP. All the snakes probably only spoke beautiful, perfect King's English. I bet they were speaking Reformed Egyptian, Bill. Mm-hmm. Scott and Punky with a note. America under siege. One wonders how anybody can even get a wink of sleep. I mean, you'd think that a siege has got to be a rather noisy affair. You know, bigly, big time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, too. Brother Deacon Asa points out, modern times means the last quarter to these brain-dead Trumpansies. Oh, shit, it may mean the last quarter hour. Ugh. Yeah. All right, so let's wrap this up.
One justice away from reversing that decision of the Supreme Court regarding marriage. And all of that depends upon who is going to be representing you and I in Congress at our local and state level as well.
And so here's the question. If they're one justice away, and that means he's itching to see, and he doesn't see, he doesn't take into account that maybe mortality may come along for dead-eyed John Roberts or Sammy Bad Breath Alito or Slappy Thomas or that Kennedy guy. I mean, the Kennedy kid is getting on up there, and Slappy ain't exactly a spring chicken. But no, God's going to leave them in place and probably smite Ruth Bader Ginsburg or one of those other liberals on the court. So when he says we're one justice away, what he means is he wants one of the liberal justices to die. I mean, he packs a lot, Matt Staver does, into 2 minutes and 40 seconds. The idea of an America under siege by people who want to pick out matching China patterns. The idea that that fetuses are more important than human beings. The violation of the IRS code. And then a nudge and a nod and a wink that a Supreme Court justice will drop dead so that he can achieve his filthy theocratic goals. Here's the problem, though. If you're going to go after... If you're going to go after Roe in the long run, you're going to have to go after Griswold. And Griswold establishes a right to privacy. And Griswold also establishes the right of guys to buy condoms. Not just women to have the pill, but guys to buy condoms. But the right of privacy generally. So that right of privacy that the Hannity job, the life support system for a haircut, was pissing and moaning about a couple of days ago, that goes bye-bye if Matt Staver gets his way. And, of course, you got to figure there's going to be a lot more disease transmitted by a lot more clerics who won't, you know, raw-dogging. Or barebacking, as the terminology goes.
So I encourage you, don't get downhearted, certainly not apathetic. We need to press forward. Now is the time to engage. Stay with us at Liberty Council. Visit lc.org. Join us in this battle because America is under siege. But you know what?
And by stay with us, he means... You impressionable old people, keep signing over your whole Social Security checks to us. That's what he means by that.
We are on God's side, and with God, all things are possible.
You know, that's kind of a self-serving statement. We're on God's side. His alleged savior put out a pretty instructive list of the things that you got to do to be on his side. And Liberty Council doesn't do any of them. Yeah. Yeah, Marty says, I'm also betting Staver will be out to get loving after Roe and Griswold. It's Atwood's Gilead. Coming on, Margaret Atwood, Handmaid's Tale. Yeah. Oh, God. The vision of Mrs. Staver holding the hands of the handmaiden while Brother Matt goes to town. Well, I think I probably ruined supper for somebody. Ron in Raleigh says, I must beg to differ. With the way judges are interpreting the Constitution, Matt Staver is perfectly able to do whatever the hell he wants to do as far as political speech from the pulpit. Remember, we get to pay to rebuild churches using FEMA funds or government funds to repave church playgrounds. Office of Faith-Based Initiatives, anyone? So tell me what churches can't do. P.S. We're under siege, all right, by the religion industry. That ain't funny. But it gets a cowbell, Ron. It gets a cowbell. But what Scott and Punky said about it being a wonder that anybody can sleep, that anybody gets a wink of sleep with a, you know, what with the country being under siege and everything. A lot of truth in that. Larry Klayman, who has been a white wing nut job for longer years than Carter has little liver pills, and of course a Christian into the bargain. Larry Klayman got together with somebody named Joel Gilbert on InfoWars, to talk about what worries him. And, I mean, yeah, maybe, you know, they say sleep deprivation can bring on psychosis. Maybe that's what this is all about.
Could some of this be the Democrats trying to take revenge for Clinton being under investigation for so long, as well as even going back to when the FBI was breaking up the Black Panthers, Weather Underground, and all these other terrorist organizations? Is there a connection?
That's clear. You're right. It's revenge, but it's even more than that, Joel. They're trying to seize control of the country. They're Bolshevik-style 1917, trying to destroy this country, and then once they get a hold of it, they're going to build it up in their socialist-slash-communist, atheist, radical, anti-American image. I mean, look, even Bernie...
Okay, he's about to mention Bernie. All right, to be expected. At some point in time, wouldn't you actually have to have some... No, we're talking about white wingers here, maggots, trumpansies. So something like actual examples of the stuff that... We've got Bolsheviks? I mean, I read a lot from, I mean, people so far out there on the left that, you know, they're just... They've looped around and become the right. But I can't remember the last time I ran across a Bolshevik. They're kind of scarce. Might even call them an endangered species, if not entirely extinct. Like I said, sleep deprivation from being all afraid, it'll bring psychosis.
Sanders, he took his honeymoon in Moscow. What's the left so concerned about Russia? Russia's their Mecca.
Russia's their Mecca. But by the way, there's something instructive in that. What about Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders took his honeymoon in Russia. See, we didn't get it. Because Bernie lost the Democratic nomination by more than 3 million votes to Hillary Clinton, and those aren't superdelegates, those are real people that went to the polls and voted and chose Hillary Clinton, we got to see what the right wing had ginned up against Hillary for 25 years, but we never really heard much about that 2-foot-thick opposition research book that they had compiled on Bernie. But that's an example. That's an example for the Bernie would have won crowd. You would have heard Bernie took his honeymoon in Russia for months on end. And they would have had the money to put behind it to make sure that that message got all the reach that that any other smear that they've ever run got. So I'm of the opinion that given the way that the election cycle was fucked with, Trump would have won under almost any circumstance because there was a perfect storm. You had petulant progressives running off to play with Jill Stein. You had stay at home burners. You had white wingers, Nazis, Klansmen, really coming out of the woodworks and not just quietly supporting Donald Trump, but getting active in it. You know, that's something along the way, just to remember. Every human being who cast a vote for Donald Trump from now till the end of time has to deal with the fact that that they will be described and accurately as people who agreed with the Klan, people who agreed with neo-Nazis, because they did. And see, this is troubling to me on a real world basis, because the guy who very likely may win the Democratic nomination to run for the congressional seat in my district, a guy named Rich Ojeda, who has gotten some online social media attention. In 2016, in November, he walked into a voting booth and he voted for Trump. So the guy who winds up with the Democratic nomination for this House seat is going to be somebody who will forever and anon be counted as a person who agreed with the Klan, a person who agreed with Nazis, because it's the goddamn truth. And that's, and okay, to be fair to Rich Ojeda, now he says, yeah, I did. Now ask me how I feel about it right now. Okay, great, but it doesn't change the fact that in November 2016, when how you felt about it fucking mattered, you agreed with the Klan. You agreed with Nazis. Now, I'm not trying to be particularly hard on the man, but that's an inescapable fact. The Nazis said we need Trump, and Rich Ojeda said, you're right, we need Trump. I agree. Okay? So, yeah. Note coming in from Steve. I think their assertion that they're Bolsheviks is pure unadulterated Bolshevik. Bolshevik. Well, they're Christians. They're evangelical Christians, so that means, as we say here in the hills, Steve, the truth ain't in them. Right? They'll say anything. They will say anything in their relentless pursuit of power. Lee in New York says, hey, Bob, Republicans know that the country would end if the leftist Democrats ever got power. Thank goodness the Republicans escaped the first 2 years of the Obama presidency. Somehow the phoenix of the country was rebuilt after the Democrats burned the whole nation down. That is, one gets the sense that Lee's tongue is deep, deep, deep. And his cheek. History, says Lee, should matter. Yeah, I know. And of course, it's an old trope. They accused FDR of being a socialist commie. They sure did. Because he didn't want old people to starve to death. Because old people were starving to death before Social Security. And during the Depression, younger people were starving to death, too. But Social Security went a long way toward addressing the problem of old people in America starving to death. But the good, God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic Americans, they were okay with Americans starving to death, because, you know, that's not the job of the American government to make sure that you don't starve to death. If you haven't socked away a lot of money for your golden years, then that's on you, sucker. Meanwhile, I fear I've gotten under Ron and Raleigh's skin. I'm confused, he says. Don't these motherfuckers effectively control the entirety of the U.S. government? Who in the hell is trying to turn the country into a theocracy? I guess these assholes think we want to emulate Saudi Arabia or Iran. Wouldn't that be loverly? Oh, wouldn't it? But see, they've got the problem that they're allies with the National Rifle Association, and they've got the same problem the NRA had. They had 8 long years to just market the bejesus out of guns and ammo to the point that it became difficult to purchase ammunition, not because of anything the Obama administration did, but because all the goobers were buying it faster than it could be manufactured. And then Obama left office, and all the little maggots and trumpansies and teabaggers and whatnot said, whew, dodged a bullet and stopped buying guns and ammo. And so Wayne the Peter had to come out and start banging the drums, and Dana Lush and Cole Leon Noir and Greg Stinkfield and, you know, the whole filth of Ted Pantsload Nuge. And they had to get the rubes ginned up and terrified. And this is the same shtick. And they're all kind of after the same dollar while they're at it. And for that reason, they have to keep the rubes perpetually ginned up with more and more outlandish theories. But we haven't even gotten to the truly, you know, crazy part of Larry Klayman yet. Come on, damn it. All right, we'll get this yet. I hate it when this...
They want a socialist state. They want a police state. They want to squeeze God out of this country because God becomes the government. And this is their objective. So, yes, we are fighting a war, in effect, to the death. Our lives are at stake. All of our lives are at stake. And they're not going to stop with just getting rid of Trump. Once they get rid of him, Trump, they're coming at us, the conservatives, the libertarians, those who will not go along with their socialist radical views. And that's been proven over time in a variety of countries. It can happen here. And we cannot delude ourselves into thinking that it won't happen. And that's why this dual system of justice, and this is why I love this president, because he calls it as he sees it. The legal system is corrupt to the core. There's no other lawyer in this country that will discuss that or talk about that because of retaliation by judges, by other lawyers, by government officials. When I was running Judicial Watch, I had people following me home. People would show up with cameras in front of my townhome in Georgetown. I would ask the security guard, why did they get in? And he would say, yes, it was an appraiser, a property appraiser. And I would say, well, who else's house was being appraised? And he couldn't tell me. This is the modus operandi of the left to use intelligence agencies, like you pointed out, Stasi, KGB, others, to terrorize the public. And if that public rises up, they will seek literally to chop our heads off. And we got to remember that. And that's why we need a Second Amendment to defend ourselves.
That's when I said we hadn't gotten to the full crazy. He expects to wake up some morning, not with a horse's head in his bed, but with someone having chopped his head off. You know, just kind of looking down past his chin and going, where's the rest of me? He's such a lower life form, he may just grow it back like some sort of paramecium or something. Now, you know, it wouldn't be prayer meeting Wednesday in the aftermath of the Starbucks event. The Starbucks embarrassment, the Starbucks, what do we call it, in Philadelphia. If some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Christian wasn't ready to inveigh, not against the police, not against Starbucks, no, against the two guys who weren't doing anything. And, of course, it's not the kind of thing that a white guy can get away, or a white woman can get away with doing. I'm sure they're out there doing it, but it carries more panache when a guy like Jesse Lee Peterson does it instead, because then all the white people say, look, Emery, he's a Negro, and he says that those were bad Negroes. And, you know, Negroes know when a Negro is bad. You're absolutely right, Marveline. That's why we've been married for 97 years.
Apparently, these two black guys there in Philadelphia went into a Starbucks, and they just sat there, according to the story.
I will note at this point in time that I remain convinced, and maybe it's just how he talks, but I remain convinced that Jesse Lee Peterson can't get behind the microphone without two or three blasts off the bottle of Dr. Feelgood. Or Old Panther. Or just maybe a few honks on the El Gasolino Mexicano. You know, the really cheap rot gut tequila. Because he always sounds liquored up to me. But maybe that's me. You tell me.
And they did not order anything. They just sat there and sat there and sat there. And according to the story, the manager finally went over and told them they had to leave. Because you can't go into a business and just sit around. You're in business, to make money, not to have someone come in and look silly. And so according to the story...
Now, I have to... You're not in business to make business. Yeah, I mean, you're in business to make business. Money. Well, you make the call.
They wouldn't leave. And so they called the police. The police showed up and asked them to leave. And they still would not leave. Because blacks have been taught now that they do not have to respect the authority of police.
Okay. So that's why black Lives Matters exist, to teach young unarmed black men that they don't have to respect the order of the authority of police, and that's why they get shot so often.
Of the police. And this has been in the making for years now by the race hustlers. They've been telling black youth that cops are against you because of your color. And whenever they stop you or deal with you, it's because of that. And because most blacks are already angry at their mothers and yearning for their fathers, they believe that lie.
Well, learn something new every day. Most blacks are angry at their mothers and yearning for their fathers. Now, by projecting that out onto the African-American population writ large, you reckon Jesse might be talking about himself? Maybe just a little bit?
That the cops are after them. And so years and years, I've been saying for a long time that blacks are being, not all, but most, are being brainwashed. Watch out. And the race hustlers want them like this because it's money and power for them. So these guys, according to the report, were...
You know what would be helpful is if we could find out who was doing all the brainwashing. I mean, is it all Jay-Z and Beyonce and P. Diddy and Kanye and 50 Cent? And because the last I checked... The church ties are still pretty strong in the African-American community. And Jesse Lee here said that most, not all, but most. So that would kind of take in, you know, most. I mean, I have a problem trying to imagine that there are people out there with shortwave sets and they tune in. This is George Soros speaking. No.
Ask leave by the cops, they would not leave. One of them, I was told that asked to use the bathroom. They said, no, you can't use the bathroom. It's for customers only. How many times have you gone into a place to use the restroom and they said, no, it's for customers only? I've done that so many times. Well, not so many times, but I've done that. Okay, thank you, no problem. But they didn't let them use the bathroom because it's for customers only. These guys said they were waiting for someone else to come who, I don't know if they showed up or not.
Yes, as they were being hauled out.
And then there are white people in this place, Starbucks, and they were like, according to report, eagerly happy to assist the black people, calling it racism, saying to the cops, why are you arresting them? It's because they're black. White people who do this, you're stupid, because you're only encouraging black people to hate you even more so.
So standing up against obvious issues of racism and injustice in this country just makes people who are being subjected to the racism and injustice hate them more. Well, glad we got that cleared up. Sit back, relax, be a good little fascist, and let the cops just rough up whomever they feel the need to rough up. Sure. Wonder how old Jesse Lee feels about the white folks who died during the civil rights struggle. Of course, let's remember, if not for the folks who participated in the civil rights struggle, old Jesse Lee probably wouldn't be allowed into the studio where he's broadcasting. Just saying. Unless he was needed for, for the purposes which he, which are exactly the purposes that he serves. Right? Yeah.
By pandering to them, pretending to love them, going along with them when they're wrong, you're making them hate you even more so. They're not going to love you for that. It's amazing. I have yet to see people protesting and rallying around good black people when things happen to good blacks. It's all.
Those liberals aren't supporting the good black people. You know, like Jesse Lee Peterson and Velveeta King and right. Why not? Well, maybe because you're not having the shit kicked out of you by the cops or being dragged away in handcuffs and frog marched and. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed the dog whistle. Clarity says, Bob, you weren't listening. Soros is a race hustler. Pay attention. I'll try to do a better job.
Always the bad blacks and bad things. And that's because good black people are not getting in trouble. They're doing the right thing.
Good black people don't go to Starbucks. Good black people know their place. Good black people understand that that God made people white so they could run the world.
Following the laws of their hearts and the laws of the land, they're raising their children, they're working, they're building businesses, they're respecting their neighbor, they're treating their others as they would like to be treated. And that's why you don't see it happening to bad blacks. So
and they're listening to Jesse Lee Peterson,
blacks
by God.
And white liberals were of their father the devil, they have to go out and stir up and use the bad black people.
Bad black people. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh, subject line. Well, hell, 300 plus years of slavery, 100 plus years of Jim Crow and continuing institutional racism. Well, damn, what the hell do black people have to complain about? P.S., who's paying for Jesse Lee's platform? And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. But yeah, somebody's paying. Somebody's paying. He's not out there trying to keep a radio network alive on a half a McDonald's hamburger. No. Uh-uh. Oh. So, but remember, it's not, we need to be clear about Jesse Lee Peterson. It's not just, wait a minute. We got a big old cowbell for Les. just four simple words. Uncle Ruckus is real. Followed by a graphic. Security, we got a code black. Repeat, code black. Uncle Ruckus is real. is that Jesse Lee's new nickname here at the Horn? Uncle Ruckus? Larry, meanwhile, says, this guy is a true race pimp. I just default back to, back in the day, there was no sin in catching a cheap buzz on a bottle of Mad Dog and a little bit of Sprite. Mad Dog Spritzer get you where you're going in a hurry. A little ice. Gone are the days, though. Mad Dog's gone. Most of that, the Thunderbird's gone. Ripple's gone. And now it's Johnny Bootlegger. And something just makes me think that Jesse Lee's probably got a whole case of Johnny Bootlegger there under the broadcast desk. There's a lot of confusion out there now. Ron and Raleigh says, you mean like Jesse Lee Uncle Ruckus Peterson mean bad black people like Trayvon Martin or Tamir Rice or Philando Castile? Yes, those are specifically some of the bad black people. But they're better black people now that they're dead. They would have just gone on being bad black people. Scott and Punky, regarding Jesse Lee's bad blacks, something about the way he said bad blacks, the inflection maybe, makes me think old Jesse Lee's bitter for not getting the Aflac duck voice gig. Bad blacks! Back when Gilbert Gottfried was canned in the wake of the Japanese tsunami. That's worth pondering. But like I said, he's not just there to castigate white folks for speaking out when they actually see racism. You know, when you see something, say something. He's also there to do whoever his masters are bidding. And you're right, he's tied in with somebody. But he's there to do more. And of course, just like Matt Staver earlier, there is a lot of money, and I mean a lot of money. The late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, would have referred to as a big dollar. That's a big dollar. Hatred is, and consequently, Jesse Lee is also good for some. There's no bigger, no better dollar in the right wing religion industry than riding the backs of gay people for the purposes of raising tax free dollars.
I don't know why anyone would trust children with lesbians and homosexuals who call themselves to be married, because they are very violent toward each other. And especially the so-called lesbian couples. I hear and read, and so many people testify that lesbians are really violent in their relationships.
So many people.
They are scrambling to find more information after this break, and then your phone calls. We got to bring things back to normal, folks. We've allowed this to go too far. You know what I mean? Enough is enough. These people are not mentally capable of handling the stress of raising children, because the situation itself is not normal. Two women together as husband and wife is not a normal situation. So how in the world will they be able to handle the stress of raising children? God is not with them. Satan is their father. I want my country back.
Good for him. I thought he got his country back when Geezer Disgustus became president of the United States. Mm-hmm. Oh God, I hope Matt wasn't driving downtown today. It's another. Should have warned you. You know, we've got hockey puck warnings. We may have a specific gay people roll up your windows if you're in the car warning, because you don't want folks hearing that. But Jesus God. Stephen, New York, merely observing. Nobody knew how violent lesbians were. We could pick that apart for a couple of hours of the program. You gotta have the thing upon which the assertion is predicated in order for the thing upon which the assertion. But you know. The gays, they can't handle the stresses of raising children. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That explains another story that I've got in the stack here that I've gotten from several people. In particular, well, where'd that go? Dang, got it. I'll be there in a second. Well, darn it, I had it right in front of me. Ah, there we go. Again, remember, Jesse Lee Peterson said these people are not mentally capable of handling the stress of raising children because the situation itself is not normal. Two women together, as husband and wife, is not a normal situation. So how in the world will they be able to handle the stress of raising children? God is not with them. Satan is their father. Actually, what he just said is that precious little fetus that was brought into the world, that Satan is the baby's daddy. Well, courtesy of Lee and a couple of other listeners, this story comes to us via Huffington Post, the greater Chicago area. Merrillville. A woman was pregnant, and she was in a traditional family values, one man, one woman marriage. Well, okay, they weren't married. Maybe that's the problem. They're living in sin. Menzo Brazier had himself a freedom protector. He had him a 9mm pistol that he kept loaded, and he kept tucked between the console and the front passenger seat of his vehicle. And he got out of the car to go into the store. Merrillville, Indiana. I'm sorry, this is just difficult to... These are all difficult. Once the boyfriend with the legal handgun tucked between the console and the passenger seat, loaded, left the car, his 3-year-old child took the gun and shot pregnant Shaniqua Thomas. Mm-hmm. The authorities say somehow the 3-year-old daughter grabbed the gun and pulled the trigger. The bullet went through the back seat and struck Shaniqua Thomas in her right shoulder. Mercifully, she is not dead. She is in critical but stable condition. And she is still pregnant. Detective Sergeant James Bogner told NBC Chicago, the girl had no idea what she had done and she was very scared. Police said she got out of the driver's seat and collapsed after opening the door to the back seat where her children were. People who worked at the at Plato's Closet in the shopping center there said, we just heard screaming. We ran outside with a bunch of other people. Someone said someone was hurt and bleeding. And the owner of the gun, Menzo Brazier, he came running out of the store and tried to stop the bleeding until paramedics could get there. And he was heartbroken, leaning over his beloved, and said, did you kill yourself? Why did you do this to me? Paloma Prieto, who also worked at Plato's Closet, said he rushed over. He was bawling his eyes out. So the police came along and charged Menzo Brazier with child endangerment. And because they weren't married and because Mama was in the hospital and because Daddy had been charged with child endangerment, they took the two children out of the home and placed them in foster care with Child Protective Services. Merrillville Police Chief Joe Petruch, said, a loaded weapon with children in the back seat. Real careless act. I hope she survives the gunshot wound. How do you begin to deconstruct a story like that? How do you leave? Well, let's go to the loaded part. 9mm semi-automatic pistol. And so, one of the things that is one of the things that just it goes with the turf in stories like this is that people are afraid. You know, see, if you've got a revolver and there's a bullet in every chamber in the cylinder, then pull trigger, gun go bang. But gun owners with semi-automatics are so paranoid that they leave around in the chamber, and there is a vast proliferation of pistols that don't have what you and I would think of as a traditional safety, where you thumb it off and then you have to shoot. Because, you know, that split second that it takes to release the safety, well, that could be the matter of life and death, citizen. Says the National Rifle Association, the wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization in the United States. But, you know, that couple was presumably competent to deal with the stresses of raising children, except for the part where the loaded pistol got left. Lee, in sending this to me, said, I'd love to hear someone ask Wayne LaPierre, is it true that the only thing that stops a bad toddler with a gun is a good toddler with a gun? If only the mother had had her own freedom protector ready, why, she could have shot the gun right out of the toddler's hand, you know, like they always did in the 1960s Westerns, because all Westerns teach the truth. I wonder what disagreement could have necessitated this violence. Since the mother was not killed, the toddler must have intended it to be a warning shot. I want ice cream now! Yes, I will get a pony for my birthday. It's only nap time when I say it's nap time. This smartphone stinks like a diaper. I want my upgrade. What are you complaining about? If you let me play with it, it must be a toy. If you've not guessed yet, yes, I have children. But I believe in safety. If you do not know how to work with it safely, you should not have it, especially a gun. When companies handed out laser pointers at events, I never took it. Here's a little story I like to tell, says Lee. Back when computer monitors were cathode ray tubes, my users had displays with a touch layer added. For some reason, the circuit board went off setting. The software didn't reset it. Our hardware support wanted us to ship the 20-inch CRTs for repair. Instead, I got extra circuit boards to replace on my own. I sent the bad boards back, a stack at a time. The board was inside the monitor case on the top. A few times, I dropped a mounting screw into the monitor. Think about what you might do. I turned the monitor upside down and shook the screw out. I never damaged a monitor. I know to not poke around a CRT with a screwdriver. Why do some gun owners believe that a gun does not need to be locked from firing when set aside? I'm sure most of them lock their cars, and many have car alarms, too. Oh, these are good parents, probably. No reason to think otherwise, except for the gun part. But they, like ever so many others have been terrorized into thinking that they're not free and they're not safe if they don't have a gun. Their gun ownership is pleasing to Wayne the Peter and Dana Lush and Coleon Noir and Greg Stinkfield and Ted Nugent. It pleases them that gun was there ready for a three-year-old to grab it and very nearly blow away Mama. And now on top of it all, they have to deal with the child endangerment charge. And look, I'm going to say this. I am guessing, and I apologize for any ill effect of my guessing. I am guessing that this couple is African-American. I presume there are some white Shaniquas out there, but they are a distinct minority. And so the question has to arise, would the cops have taken away the children from a white couple? Would there have been a charge of child endangerment against a white couple? Had a nice white family not too long back. Kid got hold of a gun, shot his sibling. Child was not removed from the home. The prosecutor and the chief police there in Mobile, Alabama said, this is a tragic circumstance, but it doesn't look like there's anything there to charge a crime over. Not even child endangerment when the child is the one who gets shot by a sibling. And it's pretty obvious that the parents were negligent in leaving the gun lying around. And again, the firearm was legal. Just like Philando Castile's firearm was legal. Legal does not connote safe. James with a note says, stresses of raising children, does he mean being ready, willing, and able to beat the hell out of them for coloring outside the lines? Yeah, those kind of stresses. Jesus demands that you color within the lines and using the right colors. That means white for Jesus. Did you ever notice that the white Crayola was a really unsatisfactory Crayola? And flesh? I don't know anybody that color. Not even white folks. Not even me. My white guy G.I. Joe wasn't even that color of that crayon. But remember, a lesbian couple. Well, they're violent, so the lesbians probably just would have shot the kid on their own initiative, right? Oh, there's an idea in regard to. Story warnings for the gay community. Steve in New York says, how about pink hockey puck warnings? See, this is why we have an all-volunteer staff. Yeah. Speaking of guns, well, that's a good question. Larry says, you spoke of Westerns. No, that was actually Lee that spoke of Westerns. You spoke of Westerns. I wonder just how much those late 50s through mid-70s Westerns like Bonanza, Gunsmoke, Big Valley, Wagon Train influenced generations past's mentality on how cool they think guns are. Oh, I have no doubt that it had an impact. Think about the number of people out there, and in this case, most of the time, sorry, I don't mean to be gendering anybody, but in most cases, it was little boys being provided with toy guns. I had them. Cap guns. And later on, when you got a little bit older, you could get the ones that didn't have the crappy paper caps that came on a roll. These were like little tiny blasting, you know, little tiny primers, and you fitted them onto the peg in the revolver, and it looked like a snub-nosed 38. And it had a real bang. Of course, pretty quick we figured out it was a lot more fun to hit them with a hammer on concrete and get the bang that way than taking the trouble of putting them on the little post in the little toy pistol. You know, because kids. But I have no doubt. But the gun humpers are having a hissy. Well, when are they? Yeah. Well, that's dog bites, man. When are they not having a hissy? The folks over at that website that rhymes with light and fart are incensed, I tell you, incensed that Dick's Sporting Goods, a national retail chain where you can buy basketballs and treadmills and bats and tents and athletic shoes and sweatpants and stuff like that. Dick's Sporting Goods also sold guns. And they decided that they would no longer offer for retail sale military-style assault weapons along the lines of the AR-15. They also announced that they wouldn't sell high-capacity magazines anymore. In addition, they said that they wouldn't sell firearms to anybody younger than 21 years. Well, following up on that, a spokeswoman for Dick's, in an interview with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, said that all the weapons that they had pulled off the shelves in the wake of their change to their firearms policy Well, they weren't gonna just put them back into the stream of commerce, because that would be contrary to the whole reason for not selling them anymore. And so, in point of fact, the folks at corporate at Dick's Sporting Goods decided to destroy all the semi-automatic assault-style, military-style weapons that they had pulled from their shelves. They were going to destroy them and make sure that those particular weapons could never shoot up a school or a movie theater or a grocery store or a parking lot or a university classroom, that they could do no harm. Enter that website that rhymes with light and fart. They have some very well-funded radio over there at the website that rhymes with light and fart. Well, TV, I guess. There's visuals involved, too. And by the way, we're past the halfway point of the program. We still have $265 to raise to knock out last night's deficit and tonight's fundraising goal. And remember, there's a $100 challenge on the table for brand new subscribers, either to Patreon or PayPal, courtesy of Tony and Chico. If 10 people subscribe at $10 a month, Tony will double your contribution for the first month. New subscriptions up to $100. If somebody, for instance, subscribed at $100, that newbie, that would boom, that'd wipe it out. But there's $100 for new subscribers to double their money. 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 5 at 20, 10 at 10. You get the idea. And it's all courtesy of Tony in Chico. And thank you, Tony, because Tony's been a subscriber as long standing as just about anybody. So I hope people will respond to it, and I hope we won't wind up with a $465 fundraising goal for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Anyway, so over there at that website that rhymes with light and fart, they've got a position they call Deputy Political Editor, and that position is filled by someone named Amanda House. Tell me that doesn't sound like a joke name. Like the famous drag queen name Amanda B. Reckoned With. Amanda House. Invited, because they've got one, the gun columnist for that website that rhymes with light and fart, A.W.R. Hawkins. And they set to talking about what Dick's was going to do to them poor little innocent assault rifles. Well, I could try to tease you with the content of that conversation, but no, why don't I just issue the hockey puck warning? And I ain't kidding. Because, see, Mr. Hawkins knows where those guns should have gone. No, really. A couple of strips of duct tape at the very least. I mean, you're going to be by the time we're done with these couple of minutes of audio.
Dick's Sporting Goods, they're up to stuff too. Oh, wow. Destroying unsold assault-style rifles in high-capacity magazines. I mean, they're destroying their products? What?
Right, yeah. After the Parkland,
man, and I thought I had some pauses.
Look, I tweeted yesterday that this is proof. This is one of the best proofs ever that liberalism is a mental illness.
Right. It's crazy.
It really is. Look, what they did is a week or 10 days after the Parkland shooting, Dick's banned the sale of assault style rifles again. They had originally banned it after Sandy Hook, and then they had backtracked, and now they banned it again. And so then what they come out with yesterday is all the rifles we had on our shelves at that time, instead of sending them back to the manufacturers, we're just going to destroy them.
How are they destroying them? I'm just imagining,
like destroying them, really? Like, they're going to, like, put them through a shredder? What?
Yeah. The only thing we don't have is the vocal fry here to complete the just a little note here. Who's to say the manufacturers would have accepted the firearms back? Because they didn't. It's not like Dick's took them on consignment. Dick's owned those weapons. And as owners of weapons, they were free to do with them as they please. Except all of a sudden, these titanic intellects, one day late. Well, they believe that a person is free to do with their firearms, as long as it's legal, what they please, you know, until they don't believe that anymore. Because they're, what's the word? Hypocrites. Yes, hypocrites.
These insane employees, like, lighting a bonfire and, like, throwing them in and, like, singing some, like, leftist chant.
It's a huge headache for them.
It's not a chant if you're singing it, sister.
Legally, and then they're going to have to send the pieces here and the pieces there, and they're going to do the same thing with the magazine.
With the magazine, yes.
It's a huge headache for them. There are certain rules they have to follow to do it legally, and then they're going to have to send the pieces here and the pieces there, and they're going to do the same thing with the magazines. And you know, I talked to Winton Hall at Breitbart yesterday. He and I were talking. I said, look, if this group wanted to do something that would be
here it comes would, here it comes make, I warned you
make them look good. I said, what they should have done is donated these guns to the poor and let the poor use these guns for self-defense. But see, that's how a conservative thinks. I look at these guns and I go, what can we best do?
No, that's how a lunatic thinks.
You get them to families on the south side of Chicago, the single moms who live in fear every night. They have six kids.
Yeah, because that's what the south side of Chicago needs.
Can only afford a baseball bat. Let's change that. Let's turn the table.
Yeah, mom can only afford a baseball bat. Poor mom there. On the south side of Chicago, yearning fervently for an AR-15, the rounds from which would probably pierce 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 apartment walls and kill God only knows how many people as she defended freedom. And she's only got a baseball bat. These clowns have apparently never seen the feature-length film version of The Untouchables, you know, with Robert De Niro. And do you like baseball? I like baseball. It's a team sport. Whack! Baseball bats can do some prodigious damage. And in fact, if you've got kids, because I used to do this, they'll just keep a baseball bat handy in the car. Ah, no, we were just going out to hit some fungos, officer. This isn't a weapon. And just keep it handy, and because you never know when you're going to be passing by a ball field, and do a little infield practice with the kids. And so you can't be charged with, you know, possession of a deadly weapon or anything. Now, if you've gone all Nazi like the guy we were talking about last night from the United States Marine Corps, And you start driving nails through the end of the baseball bat, well, that's kind of a giveaway. But, yeah, what the south side of Chicago needs, more guns. Like Chicago needs, more guns. Hell, like Des Moines needs, more guns. These fucking people. I know, James there in Illinois says, the horror. Think of all the lives that will not be saved by these assault-only bad people weapons. Yes, yes, I know, I know. Arthur asked, does Fright Cart still have that arson columnist? Well, I got to be honest. I haven't checked. It's not one of those sites I go by every day, Arthur, but, well, yeah. So, Jesus Christ. You know, that just looks dirty on the subject line, Lee. Subject line, Dick's Unsold Guns. Lee says, yes, Bob, Dick's should have donated to struggling couples. How about to an unmarried couple that have 3-year-olds and a 1-year-old?
Let's give that mom that AR-15 in a magazine and let her defend those kids the right way from now on. But see, Dick's didn't think that way, and their liberalism shined through. Liberalism is always blind to the people it promises to protect. Its loyalty is always to the agenda, and that is what is seen here.
Yeah, let her defend her children the right way, because beating the holy hell out of a home invader with a baseball bat, that's defending your children the wrong way, because then you can't have any bullets go through the walls and kill some innocent bystander. You know, baseball bats are potent weapons at close quarters, but they're not very good at beating through a house or room or apartment walls. They're just not. Scott and Punky noting, poor moms on the south side of Chicago. And that was the first time in recorded history that this idiot feigned 3/5 of a shit about poor folks on Chicago's south side or anywhere else for that matter. Well, that's true, too. Well, the NRA has money. Why don't they just give away guns on the south side of Chicago? Why does Dix have to do it? By the way, thank you very kindly to Jeremy, who just took us down to $260 to go. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you so very much. Jeremy says, fuck the gun nuts. Dix bought the guns. They're their property to do with as they see fit. What do you want to bet that the NRA is going to get to work in their legislative department on a no fair destroying guns law? Because, see, they have those on a federal level, because they have those in the states. We had a story several years ago that stayed with me about the fact that murder weapons. I know what it was. A guy went into the Pentagon and tried to shoot up the Pentagon and squeezed a few rounds off. Probably, maybe even killed somebody, I can't recall. But it turned out that he had gotten that gun at a swap meet or a gun show or some such, because the gun had been returned to the stream of commerce, having been confiscated by a police department, which was mandated by law to sell the gun back into the, put it back into the stream of commerce, so that the police department could then keep all of the proceeds to buy more police stuff. And those laws are on the books all over the country. Now, I've said it a number of times that if you listen to this program, you will get out in front of the curve so far that it looks like we're on straight road. When some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christian, Republican, member of the House or Senate, introduces a bill to forbid gun owners from, and particularly gun retailers, from destroying guns which they own, when that bill is introduced, just remember, hey, Bob said this would happen on April the 18th, 2018.
Liberalism is always blind to the people it promises to protect. Its loyalty is always to the agenda, and that is what is seen here.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely like cannibalism. I mean, they're eating their own product, destroying their own product. I mean, this is, like you said, I mean, really?
Cannibalism,
a shining example,
Amanda?
Of leftism as a mental disorder. I can't imagine any other business that
Michael
is
Savage
destroying
is
their
sue
own
her.
Product, their own.
That's Michael. That's Savage. That's the Savage Wiener shtick. Liberalism is a mental disorder. I wrote the book about it. Savage. Better be careful there, sis.
Own way to pay their bills, pay their employees. I mean, can you think of any other example like this? I can't.
No. I mean, I was thinking, you know, like Toyota, when the new Prius comes out, Toyota has a year-end sale on the old Prius, so they can go ahead and sell it too, and then they sell the new Prius. I don't think Toyota destroys the old Prius, just to make a point. And that, it's just what you're saying. They're willing to lose money on this product. They're willing to do all of that to make a point. And it's just
or absurd, you know, to save a life.
Absurd. I don't know how to describe it.
To save a life.
I'm just laughing.
Or lives, maybe 17 at a time. Because see, in the world of the National Ruble, I mean Rifle Association, there's no such thing as conscience. It's see, they follow the agenda. That everything bows to the agenda. Everything's driven by the agenda. You understand? And they can't conceive that maybe it's driven by conscience. I know, corporate and conscience, that's not something we talk a lot about in the same sentence here on this program, but I guess it can happen. Maybe, you know, maybe the risk managers there, the highfalutin 6- and 7-figure lawyers on the board said, folks, maybe if we don't sell these goddamn things, nobody will buy one from us and then use it to shoot up a school and then expose us to massive amounts of liability. At which point the guy from the insurance company that sits on the board says, huzzah, hello, yes, little golf clap, smart, smart, smart. No, it's just because those people at Dick's are a bunch of goddamn liberals. That's one of the, and they're cannibal liberals, too. Liberal cannibals are running across. And now they only eat guitars, and now they're on Mars. And, oh. Yeah.
I think I'm just, I have that image in my head where I just see them, you know, creating a bonfire and, like, you know, dancing to Hillary Clinton pictures or what, you know, I just don't even know. But it goes back to the point, you know, if like you said, they're willing to lose money over this AWR, which means, are they really a business or are they an advocacy agent? I mean, this is virtual signaling, and it's costing them money, costing them their
bottom
line.
Who says they're losing money?
And at what point, you know, can we look at them as a neutral third party seller of products to an organization that's pushing an agenda, pushing a platform that, quite frankly, disagrees with much of what their, you know, their base, their consumers believe in.
Hey, good for you, Amanda. But who says they're losing money? Really? Because that's, I mean, there's no empirical data. They didn't cite any facts or figures or anything to make that apparent. No. Not at all. Maybe they're making money. Maybe more people will go into Dick's and buy a baseball or a baseball bat. Maybe Dick's will become the official supplier of baseball bats to mothers on the south side of Chicago as a result of this store policy. And it's not like Dick's is, if you're in a community that has a Dick's, there are probably lots of gun stores where you can get something to meet your freedom protecting needs. I mean, take for instance me here. So over at the mall in Beckley, the mall was anchored by three stores, Belk's, JCPenney, and Sears. Dick's moved in, PetSmart moved in, lots of square footage. Sears is gone. But no sooner was that Sears building empty, and by the way, the Sears building being empty created a real pain in the ass because it meant that there was really no good way to get into the far end of the mall without hiking a half a mile. But fear not, because the people who ran Sears in the ground, they've actually got this business model where they take their old Sears's, and since they own the buildings, they lease them out to other outfits. And so a store chain that I had never heard of in my entire life has set up shop inside the former Sears in the Beckley Crossroads Mall. It is called Rural King. R-U-R-A-L. Rural King. And by God, if you can't buy an assault weapon at Dick's, that's not a problem, because you can go on down to Rural King and buy you an assault weapon, because, I mean, they got every piece of clothing that Carhartt has ever manufactured. They probably got four aisles of different dog food, because it's about rural kings, you know, not a rural prince or a rural baron, but a rural king. And they got stuff by Columbia, and they got their in-store brand, and they got high-tech synthetic nurses scrubs, and they got tools and hardware and supplies for your farm equipment, and you can buy your chickens there this time of year. And I mean, you whether you want a Dominicker or a Leghorn, I mean, they got all kinds of baby chicks you can buy. And baby, they got a couple of food aisles, and I saw there, because I'd never been in, so I just wandered through, you know, curious little consumer that I am. And you walk through the door, and there's one woman there, ain't got no other job but to sit there and fill up free bags of popcorn for people as they come in. And the hillbillies was a lined up out the door, and I was standing right there in the line with the hillbillies, because I'd done come to Rural King, and I wanted my popcorn, because, I mean, that whole store, my God, why has not some fancy-ass French parfumier come up with popcorn-scented perfume? There would not be an unmarried woman in America or anywhere else in the world if they would just come out with perfume that either smelled like popcorn or bacon and popcorn, and then there'd be a population explosion. But I stood right there in the line with everybody else and waited to get my popcorn and walked all over. That was a whole big-ass old Sears store, and it's like Walmart on steroids. It's like Walmart and Tractor Supply and your auto parts place, all rolled into one. And they got a couple of food aisles there, and I saw a jar of Amish jalapeno pickled eggs. And I was pecuniarily challenged at the moment, else I would have dropped $6 on that quart jar. Because it suddenly, you know, one of the big food porn moment, I love deviled eggs, but one of the real pains in the ass about making deviled eggs is all that godforsaken boiled egg peeling you got to do. And don't send me the links about how to roll them on the counter or tap them with a spoon or anything. It's just a pain in the ass. And I was looking there, I said, son of a gun, that's a whole jar of pickled eggs that I could slice in two, scoop out the yolks, mash up, make the deviled egg stuff out of, and they done been soaked in jalapeno vinegar. That would be the best deviled egg ever made on the face of the earth. And I may yet try that. But I was standing there munching on the popcorn. I'd been through the dog food, and I'd been down to see the well pumps, and you know, they didn't have any solar panels. I don't know why. I'd think if you were a rural king, you'd want a solar array out there giving you some free electricity and maybe even a little home wind turbine, but they didn't carry them neither, and I don't know why. I bet you they got a coal stove or two. And I'm walking through the store looking at the little chicks and munching on the popcorn. There's a sign right there that said, please don't give the baby chicks popcorn. It makes them sick, so I didn't. Try to be responsible that way. But I eventually moved over toward the entrance to the mall, because that's where that's the other place where the traffic comes in. Of course, the popcorn was only at the front entrance. But you could probably follow your nose. But right over there where the traffic comes through from the mall, they had put their Freedom Protect counter. I've talked a little bit about, on this program about how I'm fond of color. I don't want to walk around like some Puritan cleric or what have you. I like color. I like blues to go with my eyes, and I like that seafoam green color that reminds me of being in the island. I like pastels. I like lilac. And I like pink. And it just so happened that I had a pink shirt on that day as I was munching my popcorn. Well, thank you, Silent R. Lamar. I appreciate that. Silent R. Lamar says, well, I'll get my engineers on it, Bob, and see if we can come up with some shell-less eggs for your deviled eggs. By God, if you do that, you're gonna be a rich, rich man, Silent R. Lamar. You are. I'd finished my popcorn. I'd looked at their boots and their Carhartt, okay. Jim says, shut the F up. Are you on something, fool? I don't know, but from here I can hear the ice clinking in the glass, Jim. I had me a pink shirt on and a pair of jeans. And I wandered back there to the Freedom Protect counter. And I mean, they had every kind of pistol under the sun. They had little sawed-off shotgun-looking things, kind of riot gun affairs. And they had regular shotguns, and they had rifles. They had little bitty .380 caliber pistols that were so tiny, they'd fit in a baby's hand, and she wouldn't even have any problem trying to plug Mama with it. And they had, the Dirty Harry 44 Magnum revolver with the 8-inch barrel and a muzzle opening the size of a Volkswagen Beetle. And then right back there in the corner, at the very end of the rack, there they stood. That's right. There at the Rural King, a healthy selection. Well, maybe not healthy. Of AR-15 semi-automatic military-style assault rifles. And I mean to tell you, there was the hillbilly men were swarming around them like bees around a cup of warm sugar water. And they'll show them to you. I stood there and watched a store employee pull that AR-15 off the shelf and hold it up to the light and clear it, make sure it wasn't loaded or nothing, and hand it right over to Cletus there, and his eyes glazed over some, and you could see him beginning to breathe a little faster because he had him a handful of freedom. And other members of the Kalidai Collective gathered around him to wonder in awe at that amazing, amazing manifestation of death in their hands. And meanwhile, I was over at the other end at the pistol counter. I wanted to be able to make a hasty exit if need be, but not before one of the sales associates, one of the team members, could see me standing there and say, "See anything you like there?" I said, "Well, just browsing." He said, "I got a pink gun. It'll match that pink shirt." Ho, ho, ho,
haul, if you know what I mean there. Yeah, right. See, right there, a little 9mm pink. And I said, no, that's a hot pink. This is a pastel pink, dadgummit. You want to sell me a pink gun? I don't want a trashy-ass-looking hot pink pistol there. He said, takes a whole lot of man to carry a pink pistol. I looked at him and said, takes an even bigger man to walk around without a gun on his hip, unafraid of what may come his way. Kind of looked at me funny. He wasn't sure if I was being nice or unfriendly. But we talked gun talk for a little while there, and I put him at his ease. And he talked about how easy the slide moved on that Sig Sauer 380. He said, you real bargain here, and you don't see prices on Smith & Wesson like this very often. Your real bargain here is your Smith & Wesson 380. $279 in the black configuration, but if you get the laser, it's $319. You know, most handgun discharges happen within 2 or 3 feet. If you need a laser sight on a handgun, you're probably better off with the baseball bat. But I'm guessing Amanda and whoever that dude was, they probably have never been to Rural King. They got some fine popcorn. And they was having their grand opening, and a fella came up to the counter and he said, "You got that Beretta that was on sale? All sold out. Dang it! Can I get a rain check? No, it was limited supply. Damn." Note coming in from Robert in Australia. So basically, the USA is a country founded on Judeo-Christian principles where you have to carry an AR-15 everywhere you go because at any moment one of your fellow Judeo-Christians might pull out their AR-15 and shoot you for no reason in particular. Doesn't Christianity teach something about not killing and offering the opposite cheek? I'm confused. I know. For anybody not inside this great big shooting gallery of 330 million people, it gets confusing. So don't feel bad, Robert. Don't feel bad in the least. Yeah, I know. We're still not there yet. Ron and Raleigh pointing out next best thing. There's no bacon perfume yet, but maybe... bacon-flavored sexual lubricant, personal lubricant, will get the job done. You know what? I bet for some it would. It'd be downright aphrodisiac. Mm-hmm. James in Illinois pointing out that, well, steel is recyclable. Take a couple of crates of assault weapons, and you could melt it down and stamp out enough framing for a 3-bedroom house. Choose death or life, you pro-lifers. No trees killed, neither. Well, they don't want a house that didn't have any tree killing going on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Silent R. Lamar. Breaking news, mother shot by infant for not having breast milk. Or popcorn. Infant shoots parent for not peeling the eggs fast enough. Albert in Rhode Island says, hey, Bob, how do you think that loon would react if her child's school got shot up by a deranged shooter? Well, it would not be the gun's fault. Renee pointing out, Dick's is a fine example of a responsible sporting goods store of leisurely activity because, you know, they're not the town armory. That, too. Scott and Punky, subject line, righties and magazines. How times have changed. Back in the late 70s and into the 80s, the main concern of the so-called religious right was focused on getting Playboys removed from neighborhood 7-Elevens. These days, they want magazines and the guns they go into freely distributed in the already war zone like poor neighborhoods. We're through the looking glass now and all begging the caterpillar for a big hit off the hookah.
Yeah. Red pills, right? Darcy with a note. How about bacon-flavored lipstick? I think there's already bacon-flavored lip balm. The local Rippy Marts around here are presently selling a lip balm, and I tell you what, they're doing a land office business in it. Beats the daylights out of me. But there's little boxes of it sitting by the cash registers, and the boxes are at least two-thirds empty. They're selling a lip balm that is billed as chicken poop. I kid you not. They tell you in the box, does not contain chicken feces. Well, I feel better already. It's from some enterprising capitalist out in the state of Kansas. Mm-hmm. Chicken poop. Go figure. Well, capitalism, there's a market for everything, right? Just because I'm not going to buy it doesn't mean that other people won't. Lee in New York says, subject line, popcorn perfume. Why would any woman want to be approached by every man who smells the popcorn perfume? I will guess getting approached by every nearby man is not desirable. No, just, well, in some cases, Mr. Right, or in other cases, you know, Mr. Right now. Thus saith the Lord, New Revised Judeo-Christian Amosexual Edition, courtesy of Scott and Punky, King James Version, Turn the Other Cheek, New Revised Judeo-Christian Amosexual Edition, Turn the Other Cheek. Hell, I fired my AK and spun that mother right around. Yeah, he turned some cheeks. So, what a load of fun. Lost Tribe in the chat room asking, Silent R. Lamar, breaking news, boyfriend chews off girlfriend's lip with bacon-flavored lip balm. Yeah, everybody just sees the downside, right? Lost Tribe says, how come I can't, is there another chat room or what? No, this is the only chat room there is. The other one kind of died with the other website. I didn't mean to, but I have filibobstered 2 hours and 17 minutes away from this program. If there is something in particular that you would like to discuss, you are more than welcome to bring it to the table. We've got... You talk about grift. This story's just plain sad. Do you remember a few years back, to be precise, about 12 years back? A young boy, 6 years old, was in the car with his daddy. They were in Ohio. And daddy turned left and immediately collided head-on with another car. The collision was sufficient that the little boy's skull was completely detached from his spinal cord. Little boy's name was Alex. Alex Malarkey. He survived the wreck. I guess some people would say miraculously. He survived the wreck, but became, as a result, a quadriplegic. And having emerged from a coma after 2 months, he began telling a story, it was reported, about going to heaven and meeting Jesus and Satan. What Satan was doing in heaven, we'll just leave that at the side for the moment. So by 2010, Alex's daddy, Kevin, had ghostwritten for Alex a book called The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven. Tyndale House published it, just leaped for the opportunity to publish it. And God, it sold like hotcakes. They couldn't keep the book in Christian bookstores and Walmarts and whatever fast enough to meet the demand for it. It was month after month after month on the New York Times bestseller list. A million copies were sold before Tyndale knew what had happened. And then the bottom fell out of the boy who came back from heaven market. Because in 2015, Alex Malarkey, who had grown up considerably and in a miserable condition, said, "I did not die. I did not go to heaven. I said I went to heaven because I thought it would get me attention." And so he revealed the whole multi-million dollar affair to be a giant religious fraud. Well, Alex is 20 years old now. His daddy, Kevin, is dead. And Alex is trying to tell his story again. He said, Kevin Malarkey concocted a story that during the time Alex was in a coma, he had gone to heaven, communicated with God the Father, Jesus, angels, and the devil, and then returned. Kevin Malarkey sold the concocted story, allegedly about Alex's life and what Alex allegedly experienced, to one of the largest Christian publishers in the country. It reads like that because it's part of a lawsuit, part of the complaint. The Washington Post reached out to Tyndale for comment, and they said, "Well, we've just, praise Jesus, we've just heard about the complaint, and we don't have any comments at this time." This book that made millions upon millions of dollars, the boy that was the subject of it all, never saw a nickel of it. And he survives, not lives, he survives now. On Social Security payments that good, God-fearing Christians like Paul Ryan would like to see go away. Another Tyndale representative eventually did speak to the Washington Post. That representative said, "For the past couple of years, we've known that Beth Malarkey, Kevin's wife and Alex's mother, was unhappy with the book and believed it contained inaccuracies. On more than one occasion, we asked for a meeting with Kevin, Beth, Alex, and their agent to discuss and correct any inaccuracies, but Beth would not agree to such a meeting." Well, no, there aren't inaccuracies in the book. The book is an inaccuracy. In the suit papers, it goes on to say, "The portrayal of Alex's near-death experience contained in the book is entirely false because Alex remembers absolutely nothing from the time he was in a coma. The core of the story is entirely false." The boy has never been allowed to even read the contract that his father signed on his behalf, and he's old enough to sue now. And he's suing Tyndale House for defamation, financial exploitation, and publicity that placed him in a false light. Reading again from the lawsuit papers, despite the fact that Tyndale House has made millions of dollars off Alex's identity and an alleged autobiographical story of his life, Tyndale House paid Alex, a paralyzed young man, nothing. Nothing. Welcome to Christianity, y'all. Because Tyndale House, they're headquartered up in the greater Chicago area, and they are a revered Christian publishing house. I mean, they publish Bibles and inspirational stories, and they got enough money to burn a herd of wet elephants with sopping wet $100 bills. And they're mainstream, okay? They're not Jim Baker. They're mainstream the way that Franklin Graham is mainstream. You'll find Tyndale publications in all manner of Christian homes around this country. And in over a million of them, you'll find The Boy Who Came Back from the Dead, which is an absolute, utter, complete, and total fraud. And Tyndale can't acknowledge that it's a fraud, because the very core of it, that there is an afterlife, that Jesus and Satan and the angels and God Almighty and the Holy Spirit are sitting around in some nether realm playing pinochle, is an entirely made-up load of hogwash. And if Tyndale is forced to acknowledge that, then Tyndale's out of business. Kind of like if it turned out that you could scientifically prove that there's no afterlife. Never mind the fact that there is absolutely no empirical proof that there is one. But if you could definitively prove that there's no afterlife, then the entirety of most religious structures, with the possible exception of Buddhism, would poof, go away. No more college classes about demons for 250 priests, so that they can figure out which has more porn or more demons in it, Playboy, Hustler, Penthouse, Swank, Playgirl, or I don't know. I can't even begin to. No more. The Vatican becomes a museum. The Kaaba in Mecca, becomes a museum. Because museums are where we store relics of our superstitious past. Ron and Raleigh with a note. Oh, come on. Lucifer the Morning Star is an archangel. Just because he rules in hell doesn't mean he doesn't get a day pass to visit his father in heaven. Well, that's true, because, after all, there's the story from Job where Lucifer and God are sitting around playing Mahjong when they start talking about how much fun it would be to fuck over somebody just for the sake of fucking with them. That's the entirety of the book of Job. Well, okay, you can fuck with him, but don't kill him. Well, all right. Let's go over and check in on the phones. Alexander with a note. Any wonder why the likes of you, Brother Mike Malloy, and myself are the biggest cynics when it comes to these fake, trifling, wannabe Christians? No wonder at all, Alexander. No wonder at all. Arthur. Also, Satan and Jesus are brothers. Well, that's true, depending on which faith tradition you adhere to. They are. They're brothers. They're on Kolob. Yeah. So let's go over and see what Punky's been whispering into Scott's ear this evening. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. Man, you're taking me back with that litany of adult titles on the just out of reach top rack. That
Dear
I remember.
Penthouse, I never thought I'd be writing this letter.
Playboy, Penthouse, Hustler, well, not Hustler, that was a little later. Playboy, Penthouse, Hustler, Swank, Jugs, Nugget. Oh,
Iron Horse had some porn in it, didn't it?
Yeah, probably. But my favorite magazine with a fold-out was High Times. I don't know if the magazine is still around or does it.
Butt of the month.
Oh, and the photography was just par excellence. You almost could smoke it. That's how delectable it looked. But
they shot with serious close-up lenses, and you could see the little THC crystals hanging off the little tiny hairs and
glistening. Jumping off the page at you. Of course, now you'd have to smoke a little to get that effect. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I've been enjoying the hell out of the filibuster today. There's hardly anything you haven't touched on. The latest notion, the business of life after death. Hell, I'm still trying to get my head around the idea of life after birth. I'm trying to sort my way through that.
Well, that's the challenge, because this whole thing, as I've frequently noted, there ain't no dress rehearsal.
No.
The curtain's up, the footlights are on, and you're on.
And coincidentally, a couple of days ago, my thoughts went back to my old friend in Alexandria, Virginia. I guess he was about 32, 33 years old when he started his ministry.
Did he say things to you, Scott, like, Scott, do you enjoy wrestling? No.
No, we didn't quite get to that point.
Well, I mean, he was a preacher, right?
Well, he had been a very successful insurance salesman. And in his younger years...
Oh, well, hell, he was made for it.
Well, in his younger years, he actually was so talented as a baseball player, as a high schooler, and he never went to college. But he was apparently offered contracts by a couple of the farm teams of major ball clubs, but he got injured and didn't follow that up, so he got his life turned around. He was witnessed to by a Christian barber, okay? And you know you're kind of stuck.
I'll convert. You got a razor at my throat? Yeah, oh, hail Jesus.
Well, not just that, but he gets halfway through the haircut before he launches into his spiel. And who the hell wants to look like, you know?
Wait a minute. God damn it. Go ahead.
No, who the hell wants to, you know, rip off the...
Yeah, who wants a half a haircut?
Exactly. Life is tough enough without walking the streets with half a haircut. But anyway, around 1970 or so, he opened up a storefront ministry on the main street in Alexandria, King Street, as it happens. And I read about him in the newspaper and crossed paths with him and got converted and became a Bible thumper and a Jesus freak. And I was thinking about him the other day. And lo and behold, yesterday, I look at my voicemail list on the phone, and there's a missed call from this guy who lives down in Roanoke, Virginia now. So I called him up last night. We had a nice long chat. And he's getting up in years. He's like 83 now. And he He's got some rather serious health problems, and the rows to hoe are getting shorter. And, you know, his doctor has pretty much told him that it's just a matter of time. But, you know, he remains fairly optimistic, not eager to leave, but, you know, he's latching on to the notion that there's something after this. So I wish him well in his journey. But that's not why I called.
Of course not.
Two things. Yesterday, you were giving a list of senators who were pretty much opposed to Pompeo becoming the Secretary of State. I know that Rand Paul has said that he's not supporting him, or at least he was making noises like that. And on Sunday, on one of the talk shows, Tim Kaine said that he would not support him.
Right, but so, Rand Paul matters because he's a Republican.
Yeah.
On the other hand, Bob Rubber-Tipped Arrow Corker is all over himself to support him. And not to interrupt your train of thought, hang on to it tight.
Okay.
The charm offensive started today, and apparently the Trump regime thought that sending a guy who had not been confirmed as Secretary of State to negotiate foreign policy for the United States was a positive, and that it would help the Pompeo nomination.
Oh, of course. We're through the looking glass. Everything bad is now good, and everything that was good is now bad. That's the modus operandi, anyway, I told you a while back that when he and the Gina woman was named as the potential CIA director, I immediately fired up the old laptop and sent emails to Senator Harris and Senator Feinstein to let them know, and encouraged everybody else on Facebook to let their senators know. So hopefully these two will not get confirmed, because we don't need them.
Well, you have to ask yourself, because I'm not one of those people who will say that the North Korean regime is just made up of a bunch of people in chicken suits wandering around talking to their big funny looking feet.
Yeah.
I don't think they're crazy.
Is that another chicken joke?
Well, I think it was. I was thinking of Paul Simon in the chicken suit from Saturday Night Live, but neither here nor there.
All right.
That was
a turkey suit, wasn't it? Or was it a chicken suit?
Nah, it was a turkey suit. It was a turkey suit. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Equally silly.
Yeah.
Maybe silly. No, sillier because with the big belly and everything. And Lauren, this is ridiculous. Right. but I don't subscribe to the notion that, you know, they're just inscrutable, crazy Asians. Okay. People generally tend to act based upon what they perceive to be their best interests.
Yeah, and they can read.
And so the question is, would they have sat down with the director, you know, the number one spy in the United States? Would they have sat down with that person if that person was being promoted to them for a meeting as the number one, you know, the head of the CIA? Or was it billed, this guy's going to be the Secretary of State. Don't worry, you know, the Senate doesn't matter. It's just a formality. He's going to be the Secretary of State. You got to talk to him because, you know, he and Trump are of one mind, which is probably true. And Pompeo has the one mind.
Well, between the two of them, I doubt that they could scrounge up a full mind.
But the thing is, the North Koreans had to know what kind of a game was being played. And maybe they do, maybe they don't know about our constitutional framework. I would presume that is probably forbidden knowledge for a lot of people, but not for all the people, because they have to deal with us.
Yeah.
But this is being hailed as some sort of a great accomplishment. But the fact of the matter is the fact that we didn't routinely talk with the North Koreans has to do with the fact it was determined that they were not dealing in good faith.
Well, I recall a certain phrase, axis of evil.
Yes, and I do believe they were one of those axes.
They were in the shoulder patch, because I'm sure the Army had a shoulder. Each person in the military had a shoulder patch to go on the opposite shoulder of the flag. Nice graphic.
I thought you were
going to
say they were in the billiard room with the wrench, but that's okay.
No, a nice little embroidered graphic logo, Axis of Evil, with the names Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. I think, weren't they the three?
Yes.
Yeah, because Russia, I guess, is no longer the evil empire. That's so yesterday.
Oh, no, they're our dear friends.
Yeah, Jesus. You're starting to depress me, Bob.
Sorry. Well, you know what you have to say.
Yeah, I know. We're all screwed, Bob.
But you can't. But the thing that, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable with my comprehension of the Constitution and how it works. And I checked in with the for-profit media today on CNN and MSNBC. No way I'm going to go over to Fox. I checked in with CBS Interactive, you know, on their little phone app. It's kind of like it's kind of like AA ball. I couldn't find anybody really talking about the fact that the process was usurped. The president constitutionally is the maker of foreign policy. That is absolutely true. And he can designate anybody he wants to go and talk to whomever he wants to. But the government, in addition to being run according to the Constitution, or at least theoretically, also runs on tradition and precedent. And the idea that he would just send if Pompeo had not been the Secretary of State nominee, it would have been less problematic. And I could tell, I think, that it was problematic when I saw editorial decisions being made to describe Mike Pompeo as Donald Trump sent CIA Director Mike Pompeo to North Korea. They had no choice. That is what he is. But it was wholly ignored that he had completely bypassed, for all intents and purposes, the advice and consent role of the Senate.
Well, I don't recall there being a great mainstream media hue and cry over the nomination of, Gorsuch was the one that got in, Obama's nominee. I can't even think of his name.
Merrick Garland.
Merrick Garland. That went on a year or more, or damn close to it, where Mitch McConnell steadfastly refused to let the process engage. Good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, he just said no.
Yeah, we can't have another Negro appointed Supreme Court justice.
Oh, and since I brought up McConnell's name, I don't know if I sent this to you or not. Let me see. This talk about there's just so much to get your head around with these fools. Let's see. Yeah, okay. There was a thing in the Associated Press reported Tuesday. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Tuesday thwarted a bipartisan effort to protect Special Counsel Robert Mueller's job, saying he will not hold a floor vote on the legislation, even if it's approved next week by the Senate Judiciary Committee. Okay? And a number of people heard this, and they said that not only is the GOP senator said not only is a bill like that unconstitutional, but it's simply not good politics to try and tell Trump what to do, liking the legislation to, quote, poking the bear. oh, what the hell is that noise? You know, first of all, Trump is not anything like a bear. Bears hibernate. Trump barely even sleeps. Now, I will concede that Trump probably does shit in the woods. I just can't figure out. I can't figure out how he transforms that prodigious amount of fecal output into a tweetable form. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But it's like there are no rules. Traditions be damned. Senate protocol be damned. You know, advise and consent.
The story is probably apocryphal and it really didn't happen, but people know the story because it's been around for a couple of thousand years. But no, at this point in time, the horse's hoof is on the first step of the Senate.
No, I don't get the reference.
Caligula was said to have made his horse Incitatus a member of the Roman Senate.
Ah, okay.
At this point, the cantaloupe Caligula the horse has one step on the Senate steps. That's one hoof on the Senate steps. That's
well, they actually call rewrite because in today's world, the horse needs to turn itself around and enter that way because otherwise, you know, there's never mind horses' hooves. We've got the places loaded with horses' asses. So what's the horse's name?
Incitatus. Incitatus.
Turn Incitatus around and back him on in. Even Punky concurs.
I heard that. Well, Darlene in Connecticut just let me know that Bob Menendez, who is the ranking minority member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, has publicly stated, for a variety of reasons, that he will vote against Mike Pompeo. I presume Cory Booker will vote against him. I presume that the entirety, it'll be a party line vote in the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got to deal with what happens in terms of a floor vote. Darlene pointing out that she had called, she said, also, I called Chris Murphy's Washington office today and lodged my complaint. I hope more Horn listeners call their senators to complain about this violation of the separation of powers. Stupid is Pompeo? He reminds me of Alex Jones, too. Them's fighting words. But, that's one of the sickening things. I've made more than one phone call now to Manchin's office saying, you know, just reminding you, he's up for re-election, and voting for Pompeo is not going to assure him the votes of the people that he needs to vote for him.
Well, the thing is, just about everybody within the sound of your voice and my voice has access to email, okay? You'd have to be, you know, really challenged to not to be able to find the name and email addresses of your two U.S. senators. It takes about 10 minutes at most. You don't have to write an epic poem. You just basically say, here's what I'm writing about. Please consider not supporting Gina, what's her name, for CIA, or Pompeo for Secretary of State.
Right.
Easy peasy, you know? And what is it about, who was, it was the Colorado senator, Republican, I believe.
Cory Gardner.
Who decided not to let any judicial nominees advance through the system until Trump let the states have final say on legal or medical or recreational marijuana in the states. That seems to be a technique that might work. Throw a wrench in that MFR, you know, to give them no other choice but to get stuff correctly handled. You know, power is no good unless first you realize you've got it. And then the second step, of course, is to put it into gear. But strangely enough, Bob, this is not why I called.
Either? Well, let me before we get to why you did, let me add one more thing.
Okay.
I
mean, it's
Ben Cardin. Ben Cardin of Maryland has gone on record as opposing the nomination of Pompeo, which Good. Means that with Rand Paul saying that he won't support him, that means that Pompeo's nomination does not get out of committee. If all the Democrats plus Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, vote against Pompeo's nomination, he doesn't get out of committee. That does not mean the nomination is dead. That just means that Chinless Mitch says, well, fuck the committee. They got this one wrong, and puts it to the whole floor, the whole Senate, at which point we get screwed by Heidi Heitkamp and Joe Manchin.
Yeah, but at least in the committee, it's what we used to call a numerical impossibility.
Yeah, he's not going to lose. It's going to be a tie, and a tie doesn't get you out of committee.
Right, right.
Now, it would mean something if rubber-tipped Arrow Corker would actually put some force behind his stentorian prose. But he's indicated that he will not do that. Because one more Republican would mean an outright loss for Pompeo in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
And with Corker, it doesn't make a bit of earthly sense for him to not behave responsibly since he's not running again. Now, granted, he may be looking at Governor of Tennessee or some other craziness, but I don't know. And one last thing about the emails, and then I'll get to my other stuff. They being the Senate and the House members, will not engage correctly, or have at least the potential of engaging correctly, if they don't know you're there and what you're thinking.
Yeah.
And that's the magic of the system. You don't even spend money for a fucking stamp. You know, it's simply a matter, and you know the forces on the other side make it abundantly clear of their presence, abundantly clear. The least we can do, and I do mean the very least we can do, is let our representatives and senators know that we are here, and make it crystal clear exactly where we are in the matter of whatever. I mean, voting is important, but there's more to the responsibility of citizenship than just voting every 2 or 4 or 6 years.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, look, like I said, one of the people who's going to spoil this is probably Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
And if people who are Manchin potential voters in this state would get busy and let him know that they don't want him to vote for Pompeo, and then to add a little bit onto it, if some of these newly invigorated labor leaders, like the head of the teachers union, would make a public statement saying, not him, no way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and you know what, it would be okay for the teachers to say this, because they could say, you know, this is West Virginia, we're a really white state, but you know what? We've got gay students, we got trans students in this state, we have Muslim students in this state, and Joe Manchin voting for a man who is bigoted against Muslims and gays and trans people is entirely inconsistent with somebody we, as members of our union, can vote for. That would make a difference to him.
Yeah,
and the thing is, it's not a ridiculous position to take. It's not, vote for him, vote against him because he's the Trump nominee and we hate Trump. It's because it has a real-world impact on what they do. Yeah, Pompeo's going to be Secretary of State, but he's also part of a piece of a larger government that determines policy, and policies overseas are a reflection of the thinking about people here. I mean, that's why we have foreign policy, because we're thinking about the best interests of Americans. And Americans, a lot of Americans are gay. A lot of Americans are trans. A lot of Americans are Muslim. And to have a bigot in that office is entirely just wrong. You know, one of the few Trump nominees that Joe voted against was Betsy DeVos. And he said, the woman is just not right. She's not a good fit for the educational needs of the children of the state of West Virginia. Well, neither is having a bigot in the office of the Secretary of State.
No, the so-called theology and so-called mindset that Pompeo would bring to a rather important position, Secretary of State, is not positive. It's not productive for the country or for the world as a whole. And it's ludicrous. But then again, we've come to expect ludicrous.
And forgive me, but where the Secretary of State's position is concerned, I cannot get that magnificent line that John Goodman uttered as Rex Tillerson on Saturday Night Live out of my head. Mm-hmm. There you are, 1 minute you're the CEO of the most powerful corporation on earth, and the next minute you're getting fired by a guy who sold meat through the mail.
Yeah.
I smile every time because it's so damn true.
Yeah. Yeah. And I disagree with people that say, you know, Saturday Night Live is not as good as it used to be. It's every bit as good because it's right there on the edge of things. What's her name? Kate McKinnon, as Jeff Sessions, cracks me up every time.
Oh, that I don't know if you saw the bit from last Saturday night, but it was.
Yeah, I did.
It was world class. Yeah, you just go on down the hall, knock on the door.
All right, let me in the final couple of moments here. Let me get to it because I didn't get in last night because I wanted to bring it up. You know, the senators against Pompeo and this other item, which is, in all of the discussions we've had about television, I don't recall you ever saying whether or not you were a fan of Breaking Bad, and by extension, the prequel sequel, Better Call Saul.
I have addressed that issue. It is a bit of a controversy. Okay. I never watched it. I think I tried to watch the first episode of Breaking Bad, and I just couldn't.
Why?
The subject matter, the topic. It didn't hold any resonance for me. I don't care what happens to some guy who makes meth.
Yeah, but you do care about compelling, great, beautifully written and acted television. I do know that.
But for some reason or another, you know, maybe I just need to sit down and do a weekend of it and just binge it.
I guarantee you, in the first season, because of the writer's strike back then, there's only like seven or eight episodes in the first season. It's an abbreviated season. I guarantee you, Bob, if you watch the entirety of the first season of Breaking Bad, the hooks will be in you like you had a meth habit.
Oh dear.
In a good way, I mean. For years, I went back and forth as to whether Mad Men or Breaking Bad was the
now,
better.
Now, see, I watched a few episodes of Mad Men, and I enjoyed the hell out of that.
Oh, Mad Men. I think at the fourth season or thereabouts, it kind of went off the rails. But then Breaking Bad came along, and it stayed true and consistent and brilliant from the first frame of film to the very last. I cannot say enough good things about that. Because another thing now, the prequel, sequel, Better Call Saul, is about a character to whom you've not been introduced, a sleazy Albuquerque mall lawyer named Saul Goodman, or so he says. I mean, oh, Bob, you've got to... I am really the same way about Breaking Bad and you're not watching it as you were and the truth seekers and fun lovers were about me taking my sweet time to discover or rediscover the Jeff Bridges picture.
Lebowski?
Lebowski, yeah. I beg you.
Yeah, and you're still into us for the Squidbillies too.
Yeah, I tried that link that you sent, and I don't know whether it's my browser or what, but I'll try it tonight on Chrome and see if that makes a difference. I may have a setting.
Yeah, that's weird because DirecTV Now has stopped working on Chrome for me back here in the studio, and it pisses me off.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Do you keep your app current? Because I know they had a recent upgrade.
I don't know. It's weird. I think maybe I need to clear my history or something. But you got some backup here.
Good.
Brother Deacon Asa says, "Friend, I've heard you say this before, and I think you should be beaten for it. Breaking Bad is world class television. Scott is absolutely correct. I only watched it 2 years after its conclusion." Well, okay.
And every episode is on Netflix, as are the first three seasons of Better Call Saul. But Vince Gilligan, the guy that created both programs, says that you don't necessarily have to watch Breaking Bad to get Better Call Saul, but you get a much richer experience by knowing the Breaking Bad story and then going into Better Call Saul. It's some of the best television ever made. And I just encourage you to see it because there's so little really quality, superb television. Well, hell, Bryan Cranston won the Emmy for Best Actor. Well, out of the five seasons, I think he won 3 or 4 years. So that should tell you something.
Well, I'm going to have a go at it.
I hope you do, because it's exquisite television. And how often can you use the term exquisite about something that comes over the TV? I mean, come on. Even Punky likes it. He likes the opening credits with the chemical abbreviations worked into the names of the actors and the craftspeople. But then again, Punky is funny that way.
Well, Punky's just funny. But that being the case, we got to get out of here. Hang on a minute.
Okay.
Hang on a minute.
All right.
It's spring. The stink bugs are back.
Uh-oh.
And he was on the microphone, and I didn't want to flick him away and, you know, have you hear the big old thump. So I had to mute there. Anyway, thanks for the conversation, Scott. I will take it under advisement. I'll check in with the boss and see if she's willing to do that. You know, we're still waiting for the return of things like Handmaid's Tale and we just now started the third season of The Expanse, and I'm all excited about that. That is one badass Australian Martian Marine on The Expanse. That's all I can tell you.
Well, see, this is the perfect time of year.
I'm a sci-fi guy.
To catch up on TV stuff that you missed along the way, because summer is usually either reruns or shows that are not going to make it into the summer or past the summer. And it's right there at your fingertips, Bob.
All right.
Pop up some of that Rural King popcorn and fix yourself something yummy to drink and put on your footy jammies and keep the back trap closed and sit down and snuggle up and revel.
All right, and you know what? I'll get a bunch of emails about, you know, Bob, I can't believe, you know, all this time you're telling us how to watch TV. Screw you, Bob. You haven't even watched Breaking Bad, bastard. Yeah.
All right, man.
Later, Scott. Good night, Punky.
Bye, Punky. Say good night, Punk. Sitting there like stone-faced.
Yeah, uncooperative bird. Later, Scott. And
the cat, forget it. Lost cause altogether.
Yeah. See ya. Our buddy Scott and Punky calling from San Diego. I overran again. Happens. Thanks, everybody, for joining in this little conversation. Thank you, Will in Chicago, in the chat room, noting I enjoyed the show. Thank you. I had a lot of fun, too. And, you know, we'll get back into the swamp again tomorrow night. You know, don't worry. I just had the hip waders drying, that was all. And we got to do this on prayer meeting Wednesday from time to time. So, again, thanks, everybody. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Remember, there is a $100 challenge for 10 new $10 a month subscribers, courtesy of Tony and Chico. Please don't let that go. I mean, again, we're talking about a half a McDonald's, not even cheeseburger, hamburger per program. Less than, okay? And it keeps something on the air that's been on the air for 15 years. Because we do try to run this frugally. But life gets a lot simpler if I'm not constantly talking about fundraising. Thank you to Foam Cups, and thank you to Jeremy for jumping in on fundraising this evening. That leaves us with a deficit of $260. If people respond to Tony and Chico's challenge, that'll leave $60 for tomorrow, and I'll update when we start the program in the evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Didn't have anybody in the chat room this evening. Thank you. Steve from Georgistan and Miss Karen are off on vacation, and little Cletus and little Twiggy are in the Gray Bar Hotel. Kennel, that's what they call it. Yeah. Cletus was giving Steve the stink eye. She knew what was up. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to John Fox in Australia, trying to get HeadOnRadioNetwork.com back up and running. Thank you very kindly to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.